Welcome everyone to the Northern Affinity video podcast. So I'm Michael Edwards. I am the founder of the Northern Affinity. Thank you very much for joining today's discussion. Well, we'll go to our expert that we are speaking to very, very soon. But I also want to give you an update on what the purpose of this conversation is. So for me, there's twofold, really. Firstly, it's for you and I to learn something from the person that we are speaking to get new ideas, to stimulate thought. That's a great start for me. But secondly, for me, which is a big passion of mine, is to give a platform to the person I'm speaking to. It's an opportunity for really, really good people who are doing really, really good things to demonstrate that and for you to hopefully see that. So, and now that the kind of overall, all our contributors are these type of people, are small business owners, people are doing things for good. So please, if you could follow and subscribe, whether you're watching this as a video on YouTube or you're listening via your various podcast platforms, please do subscribe. Listen to our other contributors. There's been some fantastic discussions we've had in the past, and I'm sure we will have in the future. So thank you very much. I'm delighted to say now the video podcast is sponsored by Leeds Beckett University and their Help to Grow management training program. If you have a business, an SME that has between 5 and 250 employees, and you're looking at something to help you and your business grow, I would advise looking at this. It's 90% funded. It's a fantastic opportunity for so many people. The program's open now, so please do check it out, and I'll put all the details in the show notes. Enjoy the discussion. Right then, well, I'm delighted to say that today I am joined by Fliss Lee. So firstly, thank you very much for joining me, Fliss.
No worries, you're welcome.
So I think before we go into the kind of today's subject, which is all about attracting your ideal customer, probably find out a little bit about you. So tell us about you, Fliss, probably a good place to start.
I'm Fliss. My business is Honest Folk, and I am a brand strategist and coach. So basically my background is as a designer, and as a designer my job was to understand how to communicate things to a business's or organization's audience. So that's where I really got into branding, because that's what essentially branding does. It helps you to communicate what you do. And I actually love to understand why and how and all these sorts of things. So I moved more into the strategic side, away from design side of things. So when I started my business, I wanted to work with small businesses, and I saw an absolute gap for small businesses to in being able to articulate what they do. There wasn't that much resource for businesses to get the head around it, and actually it's one of the hardest things to do as a business. I know from my own business, it's one of the hardest things to do, but actually once you can do it, it fits together so many things in your business. Yep. So that's what I do, and I do it through coaching, helping people to either draw it out themselves and go away and do the work themselves, or I can also work with businesses to do it for them. So that's essentially what I help businesses with.
Excellent, Fliss. And what we'll do is, so anyone watching this, whether you're on the podcast or on the YouTube channel, we'll put your kind of all your contact details in the show notes, so people can check out a little bit more about what you do as well. So today's subject, obviously, as we mentioned, is about attracting ideal customer. Now, before we go on to the how, maybe the why is probably a good place to start. You know, why does it matter? Why do you need to do the work, I guess, to understand who your ideal customer is and then to attract them?
Well, first of all, we all set up our business for a reason. And a lot of that reason is helping people or other businesses with something in particular. So why you want to attract your ideal customer is you actually want to be working with the people that you want to be working with and the people that you will make the biggest difference. And knowing who they are is really important, because we've all heard the saying about how, you know, attracting everybody, if you attract everybody, you're going to attract nobody. If you're trying to talk to everybody, you're not actually going to really attract the people who you can make a real difference to and who you really enjoy working with, because we all want to enjoy what we do. So that's why it's really important to understand the absolute ideal people to attract.
No, absolutely. And I think, you know, we both saw a contact of ours LinkedIn post this morning, Gina, when she mentioned that point, didn't she, about if you try to speak to everybody, you speak to nobody. And that's so true, isn't it? So I'd be interested to know from your experience how often the ideal customer for people is actually who they think it is. Because I think most of us go into it probably with it in mind, formally or informally. But once we've been doing what we do for a period of time, and obviously everybody's different, it might be a week, a month, a year, or 5 years. Is it quite common for people to find out their ideal customer is different to what they expected it to be?
I'd say it's 50-50, but I actually think generally when we set up a business, we really know our stuff. So we kind of really know the people who we're targeting. But I think this is where the difference between your ideal customer and your target audience come in, actually, because some people come to me and they really know their target audience, but they might not be so clear on the ideal customer.
Okay.
So the difference is your target audience is a group, you know, the general group of people with the same problems and values and beliefs. Your ideal customer are sort of the more specific, the ones you really want to work with in that target audience. So you might not always attract your ideal customer, like the people you absolutely love working with, and it's quite narrow. You might not always attract those, but you might be attracting people within your target audience who have the same values and problems and that sort of thing, and you still really enjoy working with, but they're not the absolute kind of niche of audience who that you really absolutely love. So I think some people know the target audience, but might not necessarily know the very specific people that they really kind of are absolutely trying to speak to.
That's interesting, though, because I think I've definitely got that confused. I think myself many a time, probably before, when I've been thinking about it. And I think with that, isn't there, there's this, I think some people, when you talk about an ideal customer or, you know, customer avatars and that type of thing, I think there's a bit of a perception that what that does is almost rule out everybody else from being your customer. But that's not, I assume, you know, from what you're saying there, essentially that's not what you're saying, is it? It's that, you know, if the ideal customer has these 10 characteristics, that's great if, I don't know, you have 10 of those customers. But if the rest of your customers have 7-8 of those characteristics, they might not be absolutely your ideal customer, but they are more probably your target audience. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. Because they might, you know, it might be, for example, your ideal customer might actually be in specific industries doing specific things, but it's not, problems are not always or usually specific to industries, and values are not specific to industries as well. So you will naturally attract other people. I think sometimes people, you know, there's all this talk about niching down, and people get scared of it. But actually, in what you're doing by being specific in targeting people, Gina mentioned this morning in the post, you're being really specific in what you're saying, so you're attracting the people who kind of really get it, but you're attracting lots of people because your messaging is really clear.
You're
talking to your ideal customer, but you are also talking to a wider base as well.
Absolutely. It's that kind of, yeah, it's that probably a lot of the 80-20 rule in that, isn't it? If you end up in that situation, your customer, hopefully if you can get 20% of them are your ideal customer and the rest are people with some of the characteristics, essentially. That's really interesting. It's definitely something I know I've probably got confused with those two things over the years. So that's great. I guess the next bit is the how. How do you do that? So if I come to you and said, please, I want to attract my ideal customer, help me, how do I do that? What type of things do we look at? Do I need to know? Do I need to ask to get to that point?
Yeah, well, so the first thing that actually you should do isn't actually thinking about your customer at all. You need to really understand what's important to you as a business and what you want to achieve as a business, because I mean, your brand sits in that sweet spot between you and your customers. So if you're the key to understanding your ideal customer is really understanding the essence of what you're about as a business and what you stand for. And it's not just about what you're aiming to do. It's about kind of your values and how you behave as a business and what you stand for. So, you know, for example, if some of your values are all around environmental and sustainability, that kind of links to your audience, your ideal customer, and there. So you need to understand really what you stand for, because also you need to communicate that. So if you can really get to grips with you and why you're in business, essentially.
And you think that's something that, you know, obviously it'd be lovely if we knew that when we first started, but the reality of that is that that will evolve and you might even take you a little bit of time to figure out. And again, everyone's different, and some it might take a matter of days, and some of us it might take us years to figure that out.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we all set up our business for a reason, and from my experience working with many different businesses, that threads through right from the very beginning of your business. But actually, the more time you've had in business, the more confident you become about that. And the more kind of proven that there's a need for what you do and what you stand for as well. So I think, I mean, I've had instances where I've been working with clients who've been in business for a couple of years, and they've sort of said to me, this, when we're working out what they stand for as a business, they say, oh, this actually goes back to why I started the business in the first place. I've heard that quite a few times. So it is there, but I do think it's a kind of a confidence thing, getting the confidence in your business and actually being able to say, you know what, this is why I do what I do. Yeah. And it's so important, confidence.
100%. So kind of, I guess I didn't like you fully answer the question earlier, but kind of going back to that about the how. So what do I do? I guess it's the how do I work out what I say, how I say it, when I say it, the visuals element, everything that's part of my business. How do I work out the right things to do? So again, attract the right person.
Yeah. So knowing what's important to you as a business is really the first step. Then you need to kind of get to grips with who your ideal customer is. So this is where I guess you start thinking about your target audience and what the problems are of your customer. What kind of problems you actually solve is the starting point. So what you do, what does it solve? Yeah. That starts to bring your target audience in place. And then that's obviously where your values thread in as well, because your values and your customers' values are going to be very similar and you'll attract people. And that's where, when you start to think about that, you can actually start to think about customer personas. And customer personas is where it starts to get into kind of ideal customer territory, because you're thinking about who the actual specific people are. So obviously we've talked about how your target audience is a broad range of people. Your ideal customer are more kind of specific types of people rather than the whole audience that you are trying to attract. So it might be, you know, accountants, single owner accountancy businesses, just plucking something random out, you know, that's quite specific. Yeah. Or it might be accountancy businesses in a particular sector, working in a particular sector. That's where we're getting quite specific. And your ideal customer is who it is you're going to be speaking to. So it's going to be the owner of that business. So that's where your customer personas come in, because you're defining actually who it is who will get in touch with you. Who is the decision maker who you speak to, who decides who to work with you? And you're starting to understand what they like and where they look for their information and what their actual problems are, but what their goals are as well. and what they want to get out of life. And that builds up a huge picture of the specific types of people. And you might see threads. But I think it's also interesting to note is you might have a couple of different ideal customers. They sit in your target audience, but they might be in, you know, different types of business, for example.
So one thing I did, and kind of very accidentally, I think, at one point, which really helped me, was kind of this persona idea. I picked out actually two real people, and as a starting point, I guess, who are, and I asked myself, why are these people my ideal customer? Because it was almost like a gut feeling. Who are the ideal ones? Right. Person X, person Y. And then I asked myself why. And then the thing I did next was speak to them about what we do and listen to the words they used.
Yeah.
Because that, in my eyes, if that's the words they're using about us, that's the words we should be using to speak about ourselves. Does that make kind of a, like I said, it was a little bit by accident. I don't think I even realized I was doing it at the time, but it kind of, that's a bit of a kind of journey I went through. It didn't just happen in one day, but does that make sense?
That makes complete sense. That is the ultimate thing that a lot of my clients, that's the hardest thing that they have to work through often when we're sort of working through their positioning. So what you've done there is you've gone, what do they see their problems as, and how are they articulating it? Because often they don't necessarily know that you are the answer to their problems. So when we're looking for something, we're looking based on our own problems and our own needs and what we want to achieve. We don't know necessarily, you know, they're not necessarily going to be Googling collaborative networking group in Leeds area. You know, that's not necessarily know what they need, but they know they want support and, you know, a community and that sort of thing. So understanding how they describe the problems is really important. And then you can work your marketing to talk in their language, not in your language. And it's really powerful because you're not saying I, you're then saying you, because you're showing that you understand them and you're talking in their language, and that's what they're going to be looking for. So it'll instantly connect. Whereas I often see businesses talking about sort of more what they do, sort of the ins and outs of the day to day. And sometimes I say to my clients, really, your ideal customer doesn't care what you do. They just care that you are going to be able to get them to where they want to be. And that's the power of actually understanding what your ideal customer are really looking for and talking in their language.
Well, it's really interesting there that you used a word there, first, which is actually was the word that was in my head that I changed from those conversations. Community. So I used to hate that word, and I wouldn't use it in the context of Northern Affinity at all. To me, it just didn't sit right with me. I thought it was a bit fluffy and a bit council type word. I don't know. I didn't like it anyway. I started realizing that everybody else was using that about what we did. And weirdly enough, you used it there without me saying it. And now it's kind of one of the core things I use to describe the Northern Affinity is the word community. And it's amazing. Like I said, I resisted against it. But then I came to this realization, well, if everyone else is saying it, why should I? Who am I to say what we are? Because the reality is, as you quite rightly said there, the people in the Northern Affinity obviously are looking for a community because they're referring to us as a community.
Yeah, yeah. What word did you used to use?
I used the word group, probably was my most commonly used word. That's probably the most, yeah. If he was in a thesaurus, that'd be, I guess, the word that's the most closest to it.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because it's understanding the wants and needs of your ideal customer. Group sounds a little bit more businessy than community. So that then starts to unpick the mindset of your ideal customer and what they're actually really looking for and who they are and where they sit in the business. So when you start to think of the language they're using and actually what that then links to in terms of their other wants and needs, that's when you start to build up a massive picture of who they are, and you can get this all down on paper. The other thing is your personas are always changing. So they're not changing. You're always adding to them. So I'm always asking people, why are you? And this is a great tip, actually, for when it comes to your personas. Get your ideal customer and say, talk to them about what their problems are. Say, so why do you want to speak to me today? Or why are we having this conversation? And write it down exactly as they say it. And I'm always, every day when I meet, I'm writing it down. And people usually say the same two or three things to me. But sometimes when they say something slightly different, I note it down, because it might be an addition, or it might be a new persona that suddenly appears, because you're going to evolve over time and you'll develop new services, and you know, your offering changes and evolves and grows, and that's where adding another customer type in helps.
I mean, one of the questions I was going to ask about was kind of, I guess, how often you revisit this, which is kind of what you've touched there, and the evolution, isn't it? And probably, you know, using the example I used earlier about the word community, that I don't know if that would have been as relevant for the people in the group if we hadn't had the go through COVID as an experience. I think community, I'm talking generally here for all of us in personal business life, became a bigger thing because of that. If I had stuck to the idea of a group and not a community, it wouldn't have probably gone to where it's gone to now. So I think there's obviously the evolution of these things, isn't it, as you go along on a day-to-day basis, but also be ready if something happens, changes, and that might evolve. And obviously the pandemic's probably about as big as we're going to get in our lifetime as a change. I'm going to touch wood here. But it is, isn't it? I think it's probably a good thing to use as a highlighting of how important it is to be, you know, because your ideal customer is X today, the reality, and it probably won't be much different in 6 months, but in 6 years, it probably will be, or possibly will be.
Yeah, I think we can both sit here today to say our ideal customer has changed. And I think that's because you're always learning and growing as a business. You know, we all do it at different rates. So I wouldn't say there's a hard and fast rule of when you should revisit your personas. But if you're doing a yearly review, it should just be something you just check when you're reviewing every year. But everybody evolves at a different rate as a business, and sometimes you kind of want to pause a little bit and not have too much growth. So I'm not saying do it every year, but just review it every year. And if you're developing a new service as well, that's the other thing. The great thing about understanding who your ideal customer is and personas is you can then develop services for them, which is a really useful thing. So if there's a particular problem that your ideal customer has, or it threads through a couple of your ideal customers, for example, and you don't offer a service that's centered around that problem, but you probably could do because it is what you do, then you can develop a whole new service around that ideal customer's problem. And that is another great reason for understanding really who you're trying to serve, because it opens up a whole world of opportunities for your business.
Oh, 100%. And I've been through that experience, kind of what I was saying earlier, and you realize, again, it evolves and changes, and you realize, okay, well, now this is the type of person we are getting. So that person wants or needs X, Y, and Z, and that can be an interesting, you know, evolution of your business. So hopefully, you know, we've had people have listened to this now, probably thinking, hopefully convinced that, yes, I need to do this. This makes sense. Some people have done it to a varying degree. Some people won't have done it at all, I'm sure. Where do you start? So I always think, anything like this, you often hear theory like, yes, I know this is a thing I should be doing, but I don't know how to start with it. So what, you know, really, what one or two steps would you advise someone to say, okay, right, I want to start on this journey, but I don't know where to start? What couple of things could they do, you know, in a couple of hours on a piece of paper and a pen, just to kind of start them on that journey?
I think you've already touched on what I recommend to people to do. Pinpoint pinpoint a few of the clients that you've worked with who you've really loved working with. You know, it went really well. You absolutely loved it. It got, you know, it was the type of stuff you want to be doing. Pinpoint them, and you can either write down everything you know about them, or you can go to them and ask them a series of questions. So the sorts of questions that are worth asking are, what were the challenges you had before you started working with me? What are your goals and aims for your business, and have, you know, kind of what were they before you started working with me, and what are they now? Because it's worth actually, interestingly, to see if it's changed. And then you can start to delve into things like what makes you decide to work with a certain business, because that starts to highlight the values they're looking for, and that's where you will probably, if they're your ideal customer and the project went really well, for example, that's where you probably go, yeah, we've got the same or similar values here. And that's what you're looking for, that little sweet spot where it all fits together. So that then I think it's worth looking at the demographics, and this is for your customer personas. Now, don't the biggest mistake you can go is, I work with female business owners of this age, and purely basing your customer personas on demographics. Your ideal customer is actually the problems and the values and those sorts of things, because they are actually the things that we make our decisions on. Somebody who is just starting out might actually have the same problems and needs as somebody who is, you know, in their 60s running a business. It's those values that make a decision. So touch on the demographics to craft your personas and see if there is anything in terms of, you know, it might say, oh, well, you know, they've got a family, for example. Well, some of their problems and things will actually link to that. So that's where demographics can be really useful. And start building up a little picture of them. So if you can do it based on ideal clients, that's really useful. And then when you're starting to talk to other people, you can then sort of understand which one they fit into. And if you start to almost craft these little personas, you'll start to see themes. And it's really useful, actually, because when I find if somebody comes to me and I start speaking to them about, you know, the brand and what the challenges are, based on what they say to me, their problems are, I know which service to sell to them, because yeah, of where they are in the business, which is demographics, and also what their problems and challenges are. So it's really useful. You don't have to sell both, you know, both. Yeah. If you've got two services, three services, you don't have to sell them all, because you're like, well, this is kind of, these are their problems, these are their needs. This is the stage that business they're at. This is the service for them.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
So a question that's popped up then when you were answering that, which probably should have asked earlier, but anyway, I'll ask it now, is how tempting is it for somebody, and I guess in your experience, for their ideal customer to be their highest value customer, the biggest paying customer? Because whilst that is obviously great, that doesn't always make them the ideal customer, does it? Because there might be something about them that makes them, yes, they might be pay you more, but they might take proportionally more of your time or whatever it is. So how important is it not to fall into the trap that my biggest two customers are my ideal customers? Do you understand what I'm trying to ask there?
Do you mean it's to avoid getting swamped by sort of one or two big customers?
Well, not to kind of be almost blindsided by the value of the customer, because whilst those two customers might be, as we speak right now, your best customers in terms of finances, should I say, doesn't mean that because of their profile, whatever that profile is, they'll always be the highest paid ones. There might be somebody, other types of profile of customer, that would actually pay more or at least as much. You just haven't found them yet. So don't worry is probably the wrong way of saying it, but don't be distracted by that, because just because they are the best paying customers now doesn't mean that persona of those people will be in the future. Does that make more sense?
Yeah, it does. This is where, when you're working on your ideal customer and your brand and positioning, it starts to thread into other things. So, yeah, looking at things like that helps you to actually go, well, where am I actually spending my time? And am I actually, you know, those customers potentially might be your biggest paying customer, and they might be great, and they might actually be your ideal client. But are they, you know, they're the biggest money earner in my business, but am I actually giving all of my time to them, and are they zapping my time? And this is where it starts to thread into like looking at your service design and your processes and all these other things that you know, you start to work on when you're working on your brand. Because it might, that then makes them not your ideal customer. Because if you're earning lots of money from them, but you've got no time to actually do your marketing or work with other clients or give to your other clients, then are they actually your ideal customer? Is it what you really want to be doing, or are you being driven by the money? Because what makes you happy? I guess this is it boils down to, doesn't it? Where do you want to be spending your time? What makes you happy? And actually, are you basing that on the financials, or are you basing it on everything? You know, don't just look at the financials, look at who you're working with, what you enjoy, your money you're earning from it, and all these different things that make it up.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I guess that's a bit of kind of not be distracted by the short-term gain and think about the long-term benefits type of approach to it as well, isn't there?
Yeah. And I think it's very important to add that if you are thinking about, if you want to define your ideal customer, you may not attract them straight away, because it takes, you know, marketing and consistent messaging to actually get out there and be seen and be known to attract these people. There's going to be a transition period between the people who aren't your ideal customer and who are. That's fine, and that's totally normal. And understand that you're not just going to suddenly attract them overnight, and you're not just going to suddenly shut the door on all these people who aren't your ideal customer as well. You will still be having those come to you, and earning the kind of getting the turnover from them, while focusing your messaging on the people you really want to be attracting.
Thank you, Fliss. Yeah, so I think if people want to find out more about you, what you do, how you do it, and all that kind of stuff, obviously I touched on it right at the start of the podcast, but if they want to get hold of you, then where's the best places to go to look and to contact you?
Find me on LinkedIn, Fliss Lee, and you can also find me on Instagram. Sometimes I'm a little bit more kind of honest on my Instagram profile, so if you like a bit of a chat about what it's really like running a business, find me on Instagram. And then the website is honest-folk.com, and drop me an email as well. Find me on LinkedIn or Instagram and just drop me an email and book a virtual brew with me.
Perfect, Fliss. Well, and like I said right at the start, we'll put all the various links that you mentioned there into the show notes, so whether you listen to this on podcast or you're watching on video, it should all be there. For whatever reason, if it isn't, please just drop us a line, Northern Affinity, and we'll pass on the relevant details. So thank you, Fliss, for your time. I think it's a conversation we could probably go on forever, but I'm aware that, you know, around half an hour is best things for these podcasts. So thank you for that. Maybe we might have to do a part two at some point soon as well.
Yeah, definitely. What next after you've defined your ideal customer?
Exactly. So thank you, everyone who's watched and listened. Hope you've enjoyed that. And like I mentioned right at the start, if you want to check out all the other videos and podcasts that we've done, there's loads on so many different types of subjects that, you know, too wide and varied for me to mention now, but you can check them out again on the various platforms. So if you can kind of help us by subscribing to the podcast or the YouTube page, that always is really, really helpful. You know, the vast majority of our guests on this are people who run their own small businesses, and this is an opportunity, hopefully, as a platform for them, like Fliss has done today, to demonstrate their knowledge and experience, and it kind of really helps them. So thank you, everyone, for watching and listening, and thank you, Fliss.